The Mario Rosenstock Podcast. Thanks to Home. Finance made easy when you shop tech, electrical, appliances, kitchens, and much more. Flexify Europe Limited, trading as Home, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock Podcast.
Yeah. And Brendan Grace did the party.
Yeah.
And Brendan Grace killed it. He brought the house down.
We were at the party.
Were you?
We played at the party.
Yeah, so you remember that party?
I remember. I was with
Brendan. Do you remember Brendan?
I do, of course. Did I knew he? Brendan really well.
And did he kill it?
Absolutely. Nailed it and gave Sinatra a hiding, like.
Did he?
He did. He was amazing. And Sinatra was on the floor laughing.
What do Michael Jackson, Frank Sinatra, Ronnie Drew, The Field, and one of Ireland's most iconic radio theme tunes all have in common? The answer is my special guest on this episode, singer-songwriter Mike Hanrahan. Mike has spent over 40 years writing, performing, and championing Irish music. Indeed, he has been at the forefront of the remarkable evolution of Irish folk and traditional music over that time. Mike spent 15 years with Stockton's Wing as songwriter, guitarist and singer, writing hits such as Beautiful Affair and Over the Moors, which was the theme tune for Joe Duffy's iconic radio show for over 40 years until recently, and Mike has very strong opinions on the decision to drop it. He went on to spend 10 years writing and performing with the legendary Ronnie Drew, with whom he became a close friend. He's also supported, would you believe, Michael Jackson in Páirc Chaoimh, appeared in Jim Sheridan's The Field alongside Richard Harris, Sean Bean and John Hurt, performed for Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. He even spent years as a professional chef in kitchens across Ireland. And we have a great chat about all of these stories and more in this episode of the Mario Rosenstock Podcast.
It was how he entertained, his moves and all the gadgets he had and the lighting. It was an incredible gig.
Was it?
I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, years later, I remember seeing one of the U2 gigs that came a little bit close to the Razzmatazz, but the Jackson gig was just out of this world, completely. So the money's gone to some English company who are not on the ground here. They don't understand the nuances of each show. Like, producer of each show who chose their sig tune knew what the show was about, and they tried to match the music. Every one of them tried to match the music to their show. And that's gone, and I think that's a really sad day, and yeah, I'm pissed off over that. But Sammy Davis Jr., Jesus, I went up after the second night, and I remember saying, thanking him, you know, you may be thanking somebody, oh Jesus, like, Jesus, you have no idea how much this, the real Irish thank you. Mm. And he just stopped me, and he says, you know, he says, life is a two-way street. He said, I'm in Dublin, and I know I've got a great band, that's great for my gig, he says. Yeah. I've never forgotten that. So getting back was really exciting.
Yeah.
But it was frightening too, because the record industry was different. They used to say you had 8 weeks to break a single.
Yeah.
And you go out to all the radio stations and pile the records into the boxes and keep bringing them and pluggers and all. Now you've got 8 seconds like that.
Good afternoon to you and Mike, Joe Duffy here, sorry. And Mike will also be telling me, Joe Duffy, why he's raging about the long-running theme tune being dropped by my show, the iconic radio show. It's an absolute disgrace, scandalous, dropping now from the live line. A new presenter, Kieran Cuddy, not doing as good a job as I do, not whipping up the masses like I was able to do it. But why did they drop this iconic tune? But before I'm joined by Mike Hanrahan, it's time for this. This is a classic gift grub. This was crowned the greatest gift grub of all time in a poll of up to 20,000 Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show listeners. Do you remember this? European Championships 2004, 22 years ago. David Beckham misses a penalty against France. Zinedine Zidane scores for France. The next morning, we put out a sketch called Dry Your Eyes, Bex. This is 22 years old, folks. Enjoy.
How did you feel, Bex, the moment you knew you missed it, Bex? Huh?
I'm just standing there. I can't say a word. Because everything's just gone. I've got nothing. Absolutely nothing. One single moment, your whole life could turn around. In the distance, I see Wayne Rooney falling to the ground. Looks like he's gonna give it, then looks like he's not. But finally, the referee is pointed to the spot. It all comes down to this then, it's like everybody says, as I stare into the eyes of Fabien Barthez. Will I go left? Will I go right? Haven't decided yet. Sod it, I'll just stick the thing in the back of the bloody net. I let fly with my right boot, my whole world begins to freeze. I'm begging the silver ball, please go in, please. I see a Union Jack in the air as somebody waves it, but my whole world is in despair, cause Barthez saves it.
Dry your eyes, man. I know it's hard to take, but obviously, as I said before, like, there's plenty more games in Group B. Dry your eyes, man. You'll have a chance to prove yourself against the Swiss on Thursday. Or at the end of the day, like, it's over.
So then the lads start looking at me as if I've committed a crime, but we're still 1-0 up, going into injury time. The ref checks his watch and we all look at the clocks. Then Heskey commits a foul on the edge of our box. We all regroup and make a wall, stand there hand in hand. There's no sign of Posh at all anywhere in the stand. We all know what they're gonna do, it can only be one man. They all call him Zizou, his name is Zinedine Zidane. I wonder if he remembers how in the tunnel I gave him a kiss. I wonder if it'll please, please, please make him miss. But he sticks it in the net, which means now we're all level. Now all I've got left are the tears of Gary Neville.
Dry your eyes, man. I know it's hard to take, but obviously, as I said before, like, there's plenty more games in Group B. Dry your eyes, man. You'll have a chance to prove yourself against the Swiss on Thursday. Or at the end of the day, like, it's over.
We're all over the shop. When will the ref blow the whistle? We're not playing like England no more, more like Partick Thistle. We need a pep talk, a speech, a helping hand, a sermon, because we're not getting nothing from this ref who just happens to be German. There he goes again, giving out the yellow card, when suddenly the ball breaks to Steven Gerrard. I see the hopes of a nation all going up in flames, with a lunge of desperation from our keeper David James. The ref points to the spot, God, I'll give you £1 million if you please, please, please make Zidane do what I did. But he sticks it in the net, how could I think he would miss? Because I'm starting to regret giving Zidane that kiss.
Oh, dry your eyes, man. I know it's hard to take, but obviously, as I said before, like, there's plenty more games in Group B. Dry your eyes, man. You'll have a chance to prove yourself against the Swiss on Thursday. Or at the end of the day, like, it's over. Oh, Bexy.
And that sketch first went out on the Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show in June 2004. Would you believe 22 years ago? I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember watching the match in town. I remember rushing into studio. We'd had an idea before that Dry Your Eyes by the Streets featured a singer who sounded remarkably like David Beckham, we thought, or at least an impression of David Beckham. We said, if anything comes up with Beckham, we might jump on that. And of course, it did. The story of the tournament when Bex missed the penalty against France and Zidane scored the penalty to win the game for France. So it was a funny moment, and we put something out the next morning, and people responded in their droves to that. You can get in touch with me, mariorosenstock@gmail.com. Any new characters you want me to do, any new guests you want me on the podcast, you want me to feature on the podcast. And our thanks to Hum for partnering up with the Mario Rosenstock podcast. Hum is a finance company which provides flexible payment solutions for customers for some of Ireland's most popular retailers. They can help you make your purchases and pay back in bite-sized, easy payments. It couldn't be easier. Festival season is here, folks, and if you're in the market for tents, outdoor speakers, tech or fitness gear to get you all set up, Hum has got you covered. And thank you to Hum for getting involved, not only in podcasting, but the Mario Rosenstock podcast. Time to meet Irish music legend Mike Hanrahan. Very interesting time to have Mike on the show, because over the last few years, there's been a huge resurgence of interest in Irish music. So many amazing groups forming and doing really interesting things. Lancome, Amble, Kingfisher, to name just a few. And I get into all of that with Mike a little later in the interview. But we start back at the very start of Mike's musical journey in a beautiful place called Doolin in County Clare. So Mike, on the way in the car, right, I was listening to two songs to warm me up for this interview on the way in the car, right? And I want to have a question for you about one of the songs, which you might not be able to answer. And the other song, of course, you'll know very well. So I'll tell you the second song first of all. The second song was Beautiful Affair.
Right.
And that was written by you guys in Stockton's Wing.
Yeah, I wrote it.
You wrote it.
Back in the day, yeah.
Where did you write it?
I wrote it in Doolin. I'd left school. I did my leaving cert and I was working in Shannon. I got a job in Shannon and then I headed to Doolin and discovered music and and a lot of crack there. So I spent most of the next couple of years up and down to Doolin and getting to know people from all around the world. It was a whole new world. It was like, I often say now, I never went to college, but I went to Doolin.
Was it a very bohemian place?
Huge, yeah. Hugely.
Tell me a little bit about it.
There was a lot of poets and musicians, writers, crazy dancers, crazy artists from Holland and Australia. And so it opened up my mind completely, because I come from a very kind of strict Catholic background, and that was my kind of upbringing. And so suddenly you're in a place and you're open to new books and new music, and you're reading philosophical books that you don't really understand, but you think you do. And I just found it really incredible. And that song, I think, it took me years to understand what it was all about, but it's all about kind of heading off up the mountain or out onto a boat and just grabbing whatever's ahead of you in life. And that's what the song means. And it was really all about that. The imagery is all Doolin as well.
What age did you write it?
I would have been about 18, I'd say.
Yeah, really?
18, yeah, 18. And we recorded with Stockton's Wing when I was about 20, I think.
Yeah. For my listeners, if you can get a chance, put in Beautiful Affair, Stockton's Wing, into YouTube. It's an absolutely gorgeous song. And it starts off with kind of an a cappella harmony with all the lads, and they're kind of going, walking around, come into the sound, forget you're down, feel the air, beautiful affair. And then the song starts and it goes into the first verse.
I'm very impressed you've even got the harmony lines there.
Slightly,
that's,
yeah.
Really,
I would have heard it when I was very young. And it's a lovely, beautiful song. Beautiful song. The song then goes into the first verse. And it uses a kind of an unusual little bit of percussion at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's almost slightly reggae-ish.
It is, and the whole vibe of that album that it came from was, there was a lot of reggae in it.
Was there?
Yeah. Steve Cooney arrived into the band. He was an Australian bass player. And he was a guitar player by trade when he came here, but he beautiful bass player, and he introduced us to these sounds. PJ Curtis, who produced it, had produced so many amazing Irish albums. So he had developed this interest in rhythmic instruments from all around the world. Mm. So we had things like what they call guiros, multi-guiros. There was percussion. Tommy Hayes was our percussionist. He was just beginning to develop a real interest in world music as an Irish baron player. Mm. So it was at that time where it was a great time, because the band were wide open for any kind of thing that was put in front of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had a great producer. We had great ideas with some great songs and great tunes.
Yeah.
And that's, it was definitely reggae right at the best.
Sorry, I would never claim to be an expert, of course. So I was just guessing that I was picking up on that kind of...
Yeah, even that, the guitar chops are all reggae. And we would have been huge fans of Bob Marley.
Yeah, and I was thinking around that time, Marley, the Wailers and everything would have been huge. So this was late 70s, and the 70s in Ireland, although it was a very grim and depressing place in many respects, mass unemployment, very socially conservative, two oil crises, no money, nothing to do. But the music scene was fantastic in many respects. And one of the aspects of the music scene, well, you can correct me if you want, was that there was a kind of a resurgence in what you might call kind of a hybrid Irish music, an Irish music which embraced the outside world, embraced the real world, reggae, rock, contemporary pop, and fused Irish music in an Irish way with that music. And I'm thinking about bands like You, Stockton's Wing, and Planxty, and Moving Hearts, and even Horselips in their own way. And even the Dubliners, who brought their old style music into that modern era by making traditional Irish music kind of en vogue again.
Yep. And the Dubliners would have been a huge influence on us as kids. And we became great friends. Ronnie, Drew and myself, we became very close friends as we got older. So I always had that sound of Ronnie's voice in my ears since I was a child. And I think what they did with music was incredible, the way they brought it all around the world. People like the Clancy Brothers did the same thing. I think in the 70s, I always look at Horselips as my main go-to. They really influenced me. I was a huge fan. I even have I still have a scrapbook I kept on horse lips when I was a kid, posting photographs onto the scrapbook. And in 2018, we did a show in Drogheda for the Fla with horse lips, and I brought the scrapbook with me, and I got the lads to sign it again. So I think they were a great band. The Botty Band were massive.
Botty Band, yeah.
And Planxty then came. Moving Hearts came much later. But Christy and Donald were doing some incredible stuff with the music. I also think, though, that that era, even though we were coming out of all those, that poverty, and but it was an era where the Irish, my generation, were beginning to think for themselves, probably for the first time. Yeah. I mean, we were challenging government. We were challenging our own faith. We challenged the government on Cairnsore, that festival in Cairnsore Point.
Yes.
Was incredible. So there was a great, it was a great era for me to be growing up, because we were questioning everything, and we were allowed to question it within ourselves. But it was like a great freedom.
Do you know what it was a little bit? They say things come to Ireland are always a little bit late. It was like our 60s.
Yeah, people often say that.
Is that right?
Yeah, often say that. And I would often think that I left in Doolin, my lifestyle was definitely a hippie lifestyle. Yeah. That's how we were very free and bohemian and... Yeah. And I think that allowed our brains to open up to other things. And we were breaking away from the church. When my age group, we were the first when we really smashed that church control over our thinking.
And how ironic that at the very end of the decade where we tried to smash the church, the Pope did a last-ditch effort to get us back by visiting us.
Young people of Ireland, don't leave me. Forget Cairnsore Point.
Just
Mike, Stockton's wing, I implore you, a beautiful affair can be had with God.
Come back. All is forgiven. Yeah. I actually, when he came over, that was 79, I think.
He was.
I went to Limerick with my mum just to go down and see what all the racket was about. And I'd heard about Galway, and he was all cooed out in Galway. And his speech in Limerick was like, Jesus, no, not anymore. He was just back. He was back on message again, you know. Don't be doing this, don't be doing that. So I said, yeah, good luck.
Why, he had a bit of a flight of fancy in Galway, did he?
Oh, yeah, he was young, people of Ireland. He was all...
And then what did he do in Galway? Stop raining, get your act together.
In Galway, he was the young people. In Limerick, he was back on message.
Okay.
How dare you sin and your heathen race of young people.
Yeah.
He was terrible. Yeah.
So he understood his audience there.
Yeah, exactly. He played Limerick. He played to the crowd.
Yeah, yeah. So he was with all the hippies in Galway, you see, all the bohemians. They only get up at midday.
Yeah, and they'd be cool.
Yeah.
They liked the singing of young people of Ireland. And
yeah, but in Limerick they meant business, and he could tell that.
Yeah, and you had a few odd priests and who were guiding as well, that Father Michael Cleary and all those. They were up there.
Cleary with his children.
Yeah.
With his children. Tell us brief, just very, what's, I only remember the name. Tell our listeners about Cairnsore Point and how big it was. What was it about and what big it was?
Well, the Desi O'Malley was the minister at the time, and he had decided to...
I find so impressive, Desi O'Malley, Limerick man. Yes. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to bring nuclear power down and set up a station in Wexford.
Mm.
So Eilish Moore, actually, who only died recently, she was Christie's sister. She was a powerhouse, and she set up this anti-nuclear movement, and that spread around the country. And each town had a little groupings. I was with Maura O'Connell at the time, singing songs with Tumbleweed, and we jumped on board, and suddenly thousands of people came to Cairnsore. Yeah. And we had an effect. Our voice...
It was a bit of a Woodstocky vibe, wasn't it?
Big time, yeah. It was our own Woodstock.
Yes.
I remember Christy Moore was down there, and he was on security backstage.
Was he?
Yeah. And the security doors were big bales of hay.
Yeah.
And the Hare Krishnas were feeding us all.
Were they?
Yeah. We had to go in and listen to them and all that, but
okay.
You got a bit
and
of
so
hope.
Who kind of played there?
Oh, and Christy did. I suppose Luca Bloom.
Yeah.
Whoever was around.
Everybody in Christie's family, basically.
Everybody in Christie's family. And all those bands that were around Dublin at the time, the rock bands from The Meeting Place, which was a big gig in Dublin. Okay. All the regulars.
Okay.
Mm.
Very good. You mentioned the Clancy's there as well, of course. Bob Dylan was a big fan of the Clancy's.
Yeah, you massive. Know? Yeah.
Massive fan of the Clancy's.
And I was lucky to work with Liam for a couple of years. Yeah. Play guitar with him, and he was magnificent.
Boy, I grew up again. You know, I grew up, I'd go into, we had it, I was living in Waterford on a farm, and we had, you know, a little record player in the turntable in the good room, where it was always cold because they never put the heat on there.
That's right.
But I'd go in because it's the only place I could listen to comedy albums and comedy records and also music records. And one of them was the Clancy Brothers and Liam Clancy. And red is the rose that in yonder garden grows. You know it?
I do,
gorgeous. Fair is the lily of the valley. Beautiful. And nobody could sing it like him.
No, and nobody could sing many songs like him. He was...
Yeah. And so anyway, Dylan was a massive fan of his. Mm. So the second question I wanted to ask you, because I was listening to in the car, it's actually a question for you. It's a Planxty thing.
Right.
Right? So it's one of Planxty's famous songs, I think, called Sivjog Sivur, right?
Yeah.
And it goes, it's with the pipes.
Yeah.
So dun 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. But am I mixing it up with another Planxty song, which used to, it was an enormously famous song, like the sound of the early 70s, and again with the pipes, and it used to go you know that?
I do, yeah.
Is that Sivjog Sivur? What's that?
That's Tordum de Love.
Tordum de Love. Okay, now you
it
gave it to
your
me.
Hand.
Oh, Tordum de Love. Yeah. That's the one. Sounds very like Sivjog Sivur.
Yeah, and they broke into that after one of the songs. What song? They sang a song and broke into that tune.
Tordum de Love.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one. I mixed it up with Sivjog Sivur. I was going, this sounds very like the thing I'm thinking of, but it isn't it?
They were great bands. They had a song called Little Musgrave, which went on forever. And everyone said, you won't get anybody to listen to that because it was like, it was, Jesus went on for nearly half the side of the album. But it was powerful because every inch of it was perfection, pure perfection.
When you hear Tordum, when I hear Tordum de Love now in full pelt with those guys going, my hair stand on my arm with the power of it. It's channeling something. It's channeling ancient Ireland, but it's now.
Yeah, and they had everything amongst within the band. There was Donal Lunny and Andy Irvine together as a, for what they did with the strings was off the charts. No one has ever done anything like it.
Has they not?
Not for me, anyway, no. Yeah. They just had an understanding and they looped in and out of each other's playing.
Did they?
Yeah, it was really special.
And he's still around, Donal?
Yeah, and Andy is still touring.
Is he
still? Yeah, and Donal, I met Donal in January at the Dead Late Show. He was in great form.
Yeah, good.
But Andy's still touring.
Good.
He tours all over Europe.
Good. Would they never play together again?
They did a few gigs, and they had a few gigs, but Donal got sick, ill, so they had to pull the few gigs last year.
And if you want to put in something else into YouTube, just put in Arthur McBride, been played by Paul Brady on a guitar.
Yeah.
The way he can play it, the way he can finger that guitar.
Beautiful.
The way he plucks and fingers that guitar. And his voice, especially when he was a younger man. No, he's a great voice now, because I've seen him recently.
Yeah.
But the way he could bend his voice in that Irish in that Irish Shan Nosey style.
Unique. His style was so unique. And he was a super guitar player. Still is. Yeah. A super guitar player. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul's great.
So one of the things I came across in my notes, and if you can try and give me some colour piece here now, Mike.
Oh yeah.
Leanne, he supported Michael Jackson.
That's true, yeah.
In Páirceachaoimh.
Yeah.
Tell me about that story.
We did two nights there. Oliver Barry was our manager, and he was the promoter, so he when he nailed Jackson for the gig, like, everyone thought, wow. So Oliver was in negotiations and he convinced Jackson to do something that Jackson hadn't agreed in any other city in his tour, was to use a local band.
Is that right?
Yeah. He had, Kim Wilde was the support act who toured.
Brilliant, I love Kim Wilde.
And he convinced Jackson's crowd that we would be a right fit in Cork for the crowd. And yeah, we got the gig. We did two nights in Cork.
He did two nights, did he?
Yeah, two nights in Páirceachaoimh. And Páirceachaoimh had been, Seamus and Cush Lee was a big festival there.
John Denver and all that.
We'd been there a few times. And so, yeah, we got the gig and we got to see his band. And And we got to hang out with his band a little bit because they kind of, they'd never heard anything like what we were doing with Irish music.
Because they would have been serious musicians.
Serious players.
They were serious players, right?
Yeah.
So they would have been interested in you.
Oh, completely. Like, hey, man! What's going on here? So we got to hang out with them a bit, and that was really nice. We never met Jackson at all.
Did you not?
No, we saw the back of his head, and that was it.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Is he'd be that shepherded?
Oh, shit, Jesus, there was a crowd. He was like, there was a melee around him. It was wild.
Did you watch a bit of him?
I saw both gigs. I was mesmerised.
Were you?
Oh, yeah.
What? Why were you mesmerised?
Performance. His energy. His dancing. The songs. But the band were... Jeez, the band were...
What about his stage presence?
Superb. He was just... He was all about the audience and...
Was he able to deal with an audience?
Yeah, he just entertained. He said very little, if I remember, but it was how he entertained. His moves and all the gadgets he had and appearing under the stage and the lighting. It was an incredible gig.
Was it?
Oh, geez.
Was it otherworldly, like?
Yeah. I'd never seen anything like it.
Really?
No. I mean, years later, I remember seeing one of the U2 gigs that came a little bit close to the Razzmatazz, but the Jackson gig was just out of this world completely. Brilliant.
He was he was touched by, performance wise he was touched by something, wasn't he?
Oh yeah.
And he had something special. He
just the movement and then everything was coordinated. I mean, I always remember that, like, there was nothing disjointed about the stage setup. Everything was, I read years later how he was so serious about his rehearsals and everything had to be spot on and he worked harder and you could see the work.
He threw himself into it. He completely gave himself to it.
It was great.
Yeah, you almost feel like that when he was asleep he was practicing his dance moves in his dream. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So committed he was to it.
Yeah.
But I was laughing because thinking of Stockton's Wing, and did you go down really well there?
Yeah, sure we were. I mean, you're arriving to a stage in Cork at a Michael Jackson gig and you're announced Stockton's Wing. Everyone knows it's because it was towards the end of our huge time on the scene, and we had 7 amazing years on top, and then the crowd just, our own, here's one of our own,
and they loved
that was the vibe you got, it's like, come on, lads.
Well, great.
Fair play to you.
Great.
And in Parky Keeve, so it was cool.
And so they gave you the full...
Yeah, it was really great. We were very lucky around that period because Sammy Davis Jr. came the following year with Frank Sinatra and we played at a private party for him in Dublin.
Yes.
And Sammy invited us on stage with him to do 2 nights, and that was phenomenal.
Now, he was an incredible performer.
Oh, my God.
What a mimic.
Oh. We had only one channel at home. So the movies we got were, we'd seen all the Sinatra movies and Sammy Davis movies. So to be on stage with him, and we met Sinatra, he was a lovely man, and Lisa Minnelli was lovely. Mm. But Sammy Davis Jr., Jesus, I went up after the second night, he got us around dressing him and all. We were just spoiled rotten for the 2 days. Mm. And I remember thanking him. You know, you may be thanking somebody. Oh, Jesus, you have no idea how much the real Irish thank you. I don't know, we'll say prayers for you. And he just stopped me and he says, life is a 2-way street. He said, I'm in Dublin and I know I've got a great band. That's great for my gig, he said. Yeah. He said, 2-way street, never forget it. Yeah. I never have. I've never forgotten that.
Cool.
It was brilliant.
That's excellent.
Life lesson,
Brilliant. I think I have another. Actually, I have another story about. You might be familiar. I think there's another story about that particular gig, the Frank Sinatra of Sammy Davis Jr. gig. It's a reasonably well known Irish story, and it's. I think it might be the same because he probably didn't do 2 gigs. So it was Brendan Grace.
Oh yeah, Brendan was at the party with us.
Correct. Now, Sinatra.
Yeah.
Loved comedians.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you can imagine. You know, he spent half his life hanging around with Dean Martin and Sammy Davis and the Rat Pack. But he wanted somebody over here to do a party.
Yeah.
And Brendan Grace did the party.
Yeah.
And Brendan Grace killed it. He brought the house down.
We were at the party.
Were you?
We played at the party.
Yeah, so you remember that party?
I remember. I was with Brendan.
And do you remember Brendan?
I do, of course. I knew Brendan really well.
And did he kill it?
Absolutely. Nailed it and gave Sinatra a hiding, like.
Did he?
He did. He was amazing. And Sinatra was on the floor laughing.
Because he's not used to getting a hiding.
No, he was on the floor laughing. It was Gracer and the Wing who did the party. We were invited, but Jim Hand actually invited us.
Mm.
And Yeah, so we got the gig for two nights with Sammy, and Grace got a career in America.
He did. I read about that.
Yeah.
After the gig, Sinatra got on to his friends, and they started booking Grace over in Vegas and everywhere.
Yeah, it was great. And Brendan loved it. Brendan was a superb man.
Was
great,
he?
Great friend, yeah.
Was he?
Great friend for so many years.
Was he?
We did a lot of tours together.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was he a nice man?
Oh, sweetheart. Sweet man, yeah. Sweet. Yeah.
Great comic timing.
Superb. And on tour, he never let up, never stopped. Mm. I mean, we did a tour.
You mean he was always joshing?
Constant. We did a tour in Australia together, and we were sharing his dressing room with Brendan. And like, whatever Brendan's gig or our gig, what was going on in the dressing room was just first-class comedy from Brendan. He, like, scenes, I always remember the last night he came in at the last night of the tour, and he just stripped all his clothes and threw them on the ground and started dancing on them and abusing the clothes. Said, I'll never see you again. Yeah. But it was just the way his and timing. And he was a great singer.
Yes, he was.
Amazing singer. And
lovely voice.
His stories were,
great.
He was great.
And another thing I wrote down here, because I love picking up on these little things, is did you perform as a band on The Field, the film?
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about that, because that's a favourite Irish film.
Yeah.
Richard Harris, Sean Bean, John Hurt, John B. Keane play.
Yeah.
The famous John B. Keane play, The Field. Yeah. Go home, Yank. Go home.
Yeah. I'll dance with you, redhead.
Yeah, I'll dance with you. Yeah. Would you dance with the tinker, would you?
Yeah.
And go home, Yank.
Yeah.
And tell me your involvement.
Well, there was an American Wake series scene in it where... the night before, people went off to America from the village, and we were the band at the American Wake playing, and it was the scene where Sean Bean is mad to dance with the redhead, but your man is not having any of it. Richard Harris, he's not having any of it at all, and he takes her out on the floor. And then swings around, and then he gets to the Yank and all that. So we were playing the music for that.
Live.
And we were there for 2 weeks. Would you do that? 2 weeks and 2 days.
2 weeks shooting those scenes?
For about 3.5 minutes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It almost boggles the mind how you can be so long doing a thing.
It's like, I'd never played the Bowron before in my life.
Okay.
And Jim Sheridan says, well, we can't have a guitar, Mike, because there were no guitars in the 50s in Ireland.
Was there not?
Playing Irish music.
Okay.
So he says, you'll have to learn the baron. So I bought a baron and started learning it. I couldn't play it. But after 2 or 3 days, I couldn't even hold the stick. I was so tired. Everything was, it was bizarre.
Yeah.
But Harris couldn't dance. He had two left feet. Like.
Okay, he was just no rhythm.
None whatsoever. So if you see the film, you'll always see him. When he's dancing, he's always filmed from the waist up.
Is that right?
They don't film his legs at all.
Yeah. But fine film.
Oh, it's great. And it was great to be part of it.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a dip into Tinseltown, and we loved it.
Yeah.
Sean Bean was a lovely man. The actors were great. And we had good crack.
If you ever want to have fun, actually, just put Sean Bean and the words bastard into YouTube.
Really?
He says bastard more than any actor ever lived. And there's actually a thing called "Watch Sean Bean saying bastard," and he's dressed up in all these different costumes, all this different. He's old, he's young, he's middle aged. He's a bastard, right? Usually getting killed just before he gets killed. Bastard. He just says bastard all the time.
I met him a couple of years ago at the IFTAs. He was over.
Yeah,
nice as he was lovely man.
Yeah. So yeah, positive experiences. I forgot there to link something in with you, and you wouldn't even know this, but I went to the National Concert Hall recently to watch my cousin. And my cousin is a founding member of the band Teda.
Oh.
And Teda, and you said Baron. He's the Baron player, Tristan Rosenstock.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They're a lovely band.
Yeah.
Oh.
They were brilliant.
They're just back. They were off the scene for a while.
They were, but they were not. It's not so much they were back. There was a 25th reunion. They had gone all over the world, Japan and America and everything, played around the world, and then they kind of got back to their lives.
They had a beautiful sound.
Yeah.
Oh my! Well, that's funny.
Teda. So Tristan is my deceased uncle's son.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah, first cousin. Yeah, so he could have taught you to play.
Yeah, he could have. He'd have had his work cut out.
The Field was another thing. So I suppose there's a resurgence, though.
Yes.
All these years, would you think, in Irish music?
It's brilliant.
Yeah. What do you know? What can you tell me about that? What are your thoughts?
I love it. And I love listening to fellas my age or a little bit older giving out yards about the young bands who are doing this and that music. And it always reminds me of our day when, because we took the music by the scruff of the neck when we were young fellas. Mm. And we did all sorts of crazy.
You probably had traditionalists hating you.
They were coming at us from every angle. And because we had brought in drums, bass,
keyboards.
There'd
be stuff written about you and everything.
Loads of stuff.
Fours, charlatans.
I was told one time on a stage at the Flying Ennis that I wouldn't be welcome with my guitar.
Like Bob Dylan going electric.
Exactly. So we would upset a lot of people because of what we were doing. And yeah. Not just here, but in Germany. The Germans wouldn't take us at all.
Like, even the Germans? Not they wanted pure trad. Yeah,
not interested. It's like the drums and bass and the keyboards. And then the songs were all pop songs. I never sang a ballad in my life. Mm. So my songs were all pop songs. Mm. And that's what the band were doing. So when I hear the guys, and they're all kind of saying to you, isn't it terrible what's happened to music? And I'm saying, no, actually, I think it's deadly.
Yeah.
And I love what's going on with the music. I love bands. There's a young band called Madra Salak in Dublin.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Dirty Dog.
Oh, my God. I just adore them. And they'll take Spansel Hill. And they'll make this beautiful job of Spencer Hill. And then the next song is a song they wrote themselves, which is really equally as nice. Yeah. And I love the Mary Wallopers. Like, they're just rocking the place.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't understand.
Lancome is another one.
Oh, hell, I love their album, Fake. Yeah. I think that's one. That album, of any Irish album, reminded me of our album way back in 1982 when we stretched the boundaries.
Okay.
And I know every inch of it.
That's great.
I love what they do.
Yeah.
But even, like, I don't understand the music of Kneecap.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm not into rap music.
Yeah.
But I love the film.
I saw it as well.
And I loved it. And I love what they're doing with the Irish language.
Mm-hmm.
They have us all come back trying to learn a couple of fuckle. And
they do. And it's also, in a way, it's a bit of a political statement about language.
Yeah.
About reclaiming languages.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
They really have woken us up, and I really treasure all of them for that, what they do. And they're not afraid to voice their opinions, and I respect any band who does that. And someday I'll lock myself into a room and just keep playing the music.
Yeah.
It reminds me of remember a band called Susie and the Banshees?
Oh, God, yeah.
I've been into all sorts of music.
Yeah.
And I bought every sort of an album. There was a place in Wales we used to send away a mail order store, and we'd chance anything. Even when we were kids. So then I saw Susie and the Banshees on television. I said, geez, I better give them a go. And I bought a double album, I think it was. And I couldn't get into it. And I gave them every shot. I played it all the time.
Couldn't do it.
I couldn't get them.
Cocktoe Twins I used to be in from around that time.
They were around that time,
I loved the Cocktoe Twins.
Well, I could never get to Susie now.
Yeah. So Lancome, Amble is another one.
Amble, beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. But so it's all on the comeback.
Yeah, and there's the Vagamonts have another new album out. Mm. And then we've got great young artists like Emma Langford and Limerick, songwriter.
I know her.
They're just, it's really healthy.
Good.
And that, it's tough for them, I say.
It's tough for them, but there is a vibrant lives industry out there.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I know.
People want to be at live events.
Yeah, and it's great that people are back. I'm going on tour next month with Eleanor Shanley.
Mm.
We have a new EP coming out, and that's going to be really cool.
Mm. And you're going to go around and tour that?
Yeah, we're going to tour it. And I'd left the business for 10 years to be a chef.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know.
So when I came back, it was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Because everything has changed
in
10 years.
Fettel.
It was great. But I had to teach myself digital.
Okay.
You know, how to view the world from a digital satellite. And I did. And I'm glad. It's been really exciting
when
for me.
When you say digital, do you mean musically digital?
Oh,
really?
Yeah. And I had to, I taught myself how to record with the digital systems. Mm. I left the music business in 2006.
Mm.
So I was in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I didn't do any gigs.
No.
And the last thing I want to do after a 12-hour stint in the kitchen is start, I think I'll record a new song now. Mm. So that was never going to happen. Mm. So it was that complete divorce from the whole thing. And so getting back was really exciting.
Yeah.
But it was frightening too.
Yeah.
Because the record industry was different.
As in non-existent.
Yeah. No. I mean, you remember when you'd be getting singles years ago, we'd release a single, you'd have, they used to say you had 8 weeks to break a single.
Yeah.
And you go out to all the radio stations and pile the records into the boxes and keep bringing them and pluggers and all. Now you've got 8 seconds, like,
I know,
to do it.
I know, on TikTok.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So it's changed.
But you've also got the live scene, which is what we all need.
Brilliant. And the younger bands have really tapped into the TikToks and the socials.
Yeah.
And quite a few of them are teaching me now how to kind of manage it.
Exactly.
Which is great.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Mm. I have an 18-year-old and he still gives out about the way I post on Instagram. You're not doing it right. Again, you're making a disgrace of yourself.
Yeah.
It's a post, not a story.
Okay. I've got that. Or, you know, when you put the wrong size photo up. That's when I get abused.
The wrong size photo?
That's not an Insta photo, Mike. That's a Facebook photo.
Exactly. And you're shooting a portrait, not Insta.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. And of course, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, I wanted to leave this to later because, it's the thing. It's the people out there, I'll have to remind them, but one of the soundtracks to our lives is good afternoon to you. Good afternoon to you. Mike Hanrahan's on the line. Mike, you're angry. You're angry. And you are. That's the sound of Liveline, Over the Moors, written by Stockton's Wing.
Yeah.
And did you write Over the Moors?
It's a traditional tune called Over the Moors, and
you adapted it. You worked it.
We worked it. Like we got.
So whenever I hear that tune,
kitchen sink in there.
Whenever you hear that tune, you think, okay, tense up. Somebody's going to start giving out now. And
yeah.
You know, you fell down the stairs where outside the hospital. You fell down the hospital, St. James's. Yeah, no, the steps were dirty, were they? Another one I always love. You were at Julio Iglesias last night. That's right, Joe. How bad was he? Joe, he can hardly move. He's a corpse, Joe. Paid €110 for the ticket. They're wheeling him out there, Joe. He doesn't even know where he is. Go on. So Stockton's Wing did this song. And recently, of course, RTE has rebranded their jingles.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you're happy because you got years and years and years out of Over the Moors and it paid for dinners and it paid for some pints and life moves on.
Yeah.
But I understand that you do have some feelings about the rebranding of their music.
That's where I had to
tell me about that.
Shut the door down on being very nice about it.
Go on then.
I said it when they rang me to say that they were going to change in the tunes. I said, great. I really hope you give some young Irish writers an opportunity like we got, because it was great for us. We were on the radio every day. And even if people didn't know it was us, but when we played a tune, they'd recognise it. But we also got royalties. And there were seven of us involved. And seven of us got, over the years, 27 or 30, whatever it was, we got a good few bob royalties. And that royalties are not going to an Irish writer now. They went to London and they say they put it out to tender. And like, I don't know if you've ever tried to get a grant from the Arts Council.
No.
Like, you have to fill up these forms. I've tried.
Forever.
And I can't. It's impossible. And then you're going to a musician or a writer in Ireland saying, well, if you put in a tender we'll give you, we don't know what tenders are. We're legal tenders. We love our cash if we get it from the gig. But we don't. And that's not saying that we're ignorant of things, but just that's not our language and it's not our world. So they say they put it out to tender. I don't know of anybody who even knew it was happening like that. And they gave it to some English company. So the money's gone to some English company who are not on the ground here. They don't understand the nuances of each show. Like, each show, producer of each show who chose their sig tune knew what the show was about, and they tried to match the music. Every one of them tried to match the music to their show, and that's gone. And I think that's a really sad day, and I'm pissed off over that aspect of it.
I agree. I mean, it's our radio station. We pay for it. And it should reflect Irish sensibilities. And I would have thought that job should have been given to Irish writers and Irish creatives. By God, if anybody could do it, they could.
Yeah. And we have an organisation called IMRO, the Irish Music Rights Organisation, who control the rights of all the Irish writers, plus the world writers. I understand that. But it would have been a perfect opportunity for RT to go to IMRO and says, why don't we just see if one of your writers is up for this, you know? Apparently they went to some of the music colleges, but I think it was really shabby, and it's an opportunity lost, and there's so much money gone to somebody who knows zero about our culture. Because the music is shite, if you pardon my...
It doesn't seem to make any sense. It's very vanilla, and it seems to be trying not to do anything.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's like...
It's going, we won't go here, we won't go there. Yeah. We'll hardly even go down the middle. Try not even notice us.
Yeah. There is no connection.
And there's no connection with Ireland.
Zero. Do you know that great show on a Sunday morning?
Sunday Miscellany.
I mean...
1968, that tune started.
Wow.
On Sunday Miscellany. That tune was going 60 years.
Oh. Like, you always knew on a Sunday when you heard that tune, you were going to hear some quirky stories, and you know, somebody might recite a poem, but you're in for an hour of entertainment you won't get anywhere else on radio. And that tune signified that.
I mean, I grew up listening to RT Radio 1 and also BBC Radio 4 with my grandmother in Waterford. And you would do da 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 da
da da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da and the final four notes. Hello there, welcome back. Oh, Mike Hanrahan in the studio. Good boy. And so Wise Buddha, there they are.
And they were great tunes.
They were great tunes. Tico's tune, that was called.
Yeah, and the tunes represent something. And definitely for Liveline, I mean, it became iconic to the show.
Totally.
Really. And
inescapable, not inescapable, but bound to it. Bound to it.
Yeah. That's pity.
Yeah. But, now, another man you had... After Stockton's Wing, you collaborated with Ronnie Drew for 10 years.
Oh.
Yeah. So Ronnie, I remember I did a corporate gig once at Tato, right? And it was back in the Celtic Tiger days. And they had Bjorn Again, right? The ABBA tribute band, who aren't cheap. Then they had me, right? I was doing half an hour of comedy and I wasn't cheap. And then they had as the main event... Ronnie. Three just for a Christmas party.
Where was this on?
Would have been out in Lucan or something. Tato Park, right? Near Tato. A big Christmas party, and they booked three acts, a kind of a karaoke thing, me, a comedy act, and Ronnie. By the time Ronnie got on, I'd finished, and they were grand, they were getting a bit drunk. By the time Ronnie got on, anyway, they were hammered, and he was there. You know, hell yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. Oh, and he gets up with the guitar, and they won't shut up. And he's there, shut the fuck up, or I'm walking off the stage. And he cemented, and they did.
It
wasn't taking any bollocks. Oh, that was your boozy, oh. And he was great. So, bit of a genius.
Oh, complete and utter.
Sorry. I'm going to let you talk. Ronnie Drew was famous. Ronnie Drew was the Dubliners. Ronnie Drew liked a pint. Ronnie Drew looked iconic. He had this big beard and white hair. But what kind of a musician was he?
Well, a really interesting question. When he went to Spain in the late 50s, he learned how to play a Spanish guitar, taquero, and that was his grounding. So that's why he always played a Spanish guitar. He always used finger picking. And in dressing rooms for so many years, you'd hear him messing around with the flamenco style, but never brought it on stage because he never believed he was that good to bring it on stage. But he had a real flair for flamenco guitar. So he was a great musician. His timing was always dodgy, and he'd be the first to say that himself. But his voice and his in, his how he took a song on and told a story to is he was second to none.
There's a Johnny Cash vibe about him. In other words, when he could take a song and when he sings it, you go, well, that's Ronnie now.
Yeah.
It's, he's done a Ronnie on it.
And it's and he brings you right into the song. And he took his songs really seriously and he spent like weeks and weeks and end trying to learn the songs and get to know them and get into the heart of it.
What was he like as a human being?
Well, I knew I always say about Ronnie, Ronnie was my father, he was my brother and he was my son. And vice versa. Because we spent 10 glorious years, we've known, we knew each other for 30 years, but we spent 10 glorious years together on the road, in and out of hotels and restaurants. We had the same interest in food and a nice hotel and same interest in politics. And he was just one of the most incredible people I ever met in my life. I learned so much from him. We had lots of laughs. And for 8 of the 10 years I was on the road, Ronnie didn't drink at all.
I was going to ask you that.
He was off the jar.
Off the jar.
So he was at, he was at, the only thing that mattered to him was the gig.
Hmm.
So he wrote two or three stage shows that we toured, and we toured all over. And he was just completely and utterly dedicated to the gig. And every morning, the breakfast was a meeting, like over breakfast, and he'd asking about what we did here and that. And he was very inclusive. I remember the first gig I did with him, and he says to me, how much do you want for that? I says, Ronnie, I don't give a shit. I'm whatever's there, give it to me, you know, whatever. He says, I have to pay you. I said, look, whatever. If there's a crowd there, we'll just whatever, I don't care. I'm happy to be here. And from that moment on, he gave me a cut of the business. And that's how it was. And I looked after the tours. I looked after him on the road. I arranged all, I produced a few albums for him.
God.
We had just the most beautiful time together. He was a gorgeous man and he had a beautiful heart and he was the grumpiest man you could meet in your life.
Yeah.
I used to love him when he was grumpy. He was great. Because he suffered people kind of badly sometimes, but you'd be getting people annoying him, you know. And he'd be all, he liked what you're saying, he's going grand for a while and then suddenly someone just... They just leap over the edge.
Yeah. Cross that Ronnie Rubicon.
Yeah, and you get that growl. Yeah. He was superb.
Didn't he have the most extraordinary pair of eyes?
Incredible. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Striking.
Yeah, like really, really unusually pale blue and
just
bright blue.
Cut right through you.
Icy, glassy blue.
Yeah, yeah, and so much going on in there. Oh, yeah, his eyes, yeah. I always loved his
eyes. Was he a bright fella?
Very bright, very intelligent, very into his music and his history. Always had a book in his hand.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He loved Miles McGoplin.
He'd always have Flann O'Brien.
Always, and he'd have Paddy Kavanagh, he'd be reading. He loved all the Irish writers and the Irish theatre. And of course, he knew them all. A lot of those Paddy Kavanaghs he would have known rambling around Dublin back in the days. And he had great stories about them all as well.
Yeah.
He was
good memory.
Super memory.
So he could recount all the stories.
And I always love, and I'll shorten it for you because it's long, but he hated the arrival of like self-service. Ronnie loved going into a place and having a China cup with the sandwiches and the whole rigmarole and the pomp and ceremony of getting a cup of tea and a sandwich. And then, you know, the mornings, the hotels started bringing these troughs in around where you go and pick from the trough yourself whatever you want, and most of the stuff has been cooked at 3 or 4 in the morning. So it's really awful. So Ronnie was, one day we were doing it, he was going around gathering himself and he'd come back and forget something. He'd go back, oh, jeez, I forgot the cream. Oh, jeez, I forgot the butter. And he sat down, and by the time he got to eat, the food was cold. And the only person you'd meet in these places is the guy at the front door. And their job is really, what room are you? That's all they want to know. There's no more help you're going to get from them. So Ronnie went up to the guy who had the room here and she said, excuse me, son. He took out 20 notes. He says, is there any chance at all that you could break the 20 euro? He says, I just want to give myself a fucking tip.
For doing all the work.
And that was his kind of sense of humour.
Yeah, yeah.
He was funny.
Oh, that's great.
He used to say the only thing the Celtic Tiger did for him was getting his way with all the buildings and all that. And
yeah, sure.
Yeah, you're great, man.
Just, I remember just harkening back to the Michael Jackson story there. You thought I would have, I was trying to see if Michael, because all the band were loving your music, it would have been great if Jackson had embraced the Irish thing as well. And you went,
on night two, we're going to do My Lagging Love, and we're going to do She Moves Through the Fair, and then we're going to do Spencil Hill. Ow!
And Michael Jackson doing those.
Have you heard the version of Billie Jean that was done by AI? To the tradition of Irish ballads.
Yes, I have. It's absolutely amazing. See, I saw it on TikTok,
and it's the first time. I mean, I've listened to Billie Jean since whenever it was released. It was honestly the first time I ever knew what the song was about.
Right,
because your man is singing the words, and you can
right
like a good balladeer. He's getting the message out.
Oh right, yeah.
I never knew what the song was about.
Yeah, great little song.
Yeah,
great song. So are you going to, you're going to go on tour, and you're going to go on tour with Eleanor Shanley, and you're going to release a single?
We're going to release an EP. Eleanor, John, and myself and Ronnie for about 2000, and we recorded two albums with her, and they had a really great duet, an iconic song called A Couple More Years, by the guy who did Sylvia's Mother.
He just died the other day.
Oh no, did he?
Yeah, Dr. Hook.
Yeah, Steve. Yeah. Steve Silverman or something?
No, it was Rockerier. He did Sylvia's Mother. Sylvia's Mother said, isn't that it?
Shel Silverstein was the guy that wrote it.
Sorry, you're not talking about the singer.
I don't know if it's the singer. I thought it was. Well, he wrote all the songs for Dr. Hook, and he was in the band.
Yeah.
He wrote this song.
Sharing the Night Together. Yeah. So the singer was Dennis Le Corrier.
Oh yeah,
and he died 3 days ago.
Well, he co-wrote the song with Shel.
Yes,
that's. Oh, I didn't know he.
When
was
When you're in love with a beautiful woman.
So we recorded that song, and they had a great duet. Myself and Eleanor decided to go back and record it for this EP, but we'd never recorded anything in the 26 years together, we're singing myself and Eleanor. We were always like, we're this duet, like, actually, we'll do it next week. And, and then nothing happens, and then we wouldn't see each other for a year. And, oh, geez, we must record. Because I love gigging with her. Our gigs are kind of cool, and there's no hassle with the gigs. Mm. We're at an age now where we don't really give a hoot and turn up and do the gig and enjoy it. Mm. So the EP is coming out. And Eleanor, we were looking for a title for the EP. 10 years ago, Eleanor went back to art, painting, and she went to serious lessons and hooked up with a great artist in Galway who kind of mentored her all the way. And she has her first exhibition in August, and her work is stunning.
Really?
So we've taken one of her pieces, and that's called The Ghost of You, which is the sleeve of our...
And you put it on the
single. Yeah.
Single, yeah.
Yeah.
You should try and project it onto your gigs as well.
Yeah, I think it'd be great.
On the gigs.
It'd be great.
Be a nice piece of artwork on the gigs, yeah. On a projector screen or whatever.
And then what we might do is do an art exhibition tour or something.
Yeah.
Because you get fed on those things, and they're always just a couple of hours long. And
yeah.
You arrive early.
Yeah.
Get the exhibition, do a few numbers.
And it's two birds with one stone.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great?
Art and music. And you get fed. Three birds.
Yeah. I was saying that to Eleanor the other day.
Yeah,
to try and organise it.
That's brilliant. I've loved listening to your stories, Mike. Is there anything else you want to say? Because I've pretty much...
No, I could spend hours talking to you about what I do with creative brainwaves and health.
Yeah. Tell me just one. Briefly.
Well, I was introduced to dementia through my mum 12, 14 years ago, and I knew nothing about it. And when she died, I decided to try and learn something about it. So I ended up going to Trinity and did a year fellowship and a postgrad in Trinity.
At?
Equity and Brain Health was the title.
Yeah.
And it was working with neuroscientists and neurologists and film directors and all sorts of amazing, wonderful people around the world. There was 14 of us in Dublin and 18 of us in San Francisco. We were kind of cross sites, and we experimented and looked on ways we can develop the art in brain health and brain health care.
So now, just let me to be clear there. So this is looking to see how the arts can help brain health.
Yeah.
So we know, for example, even I know that music is
huge.
Huge. I would have thought laughter is as well.
Massive. Such an important part of it. And not for It's the vibe that people get, but the fact that people are moving their muscles and all those signals get up into their brain and give people such a buzz, dopamine hits. And yeah. I've learned so much about it, and like mime, Parkinson's disease, for instance, dance steadies the Parkinson's tremor, you know. And I learned all those, and I work now around with a couple of organizations, and we try and bring the arts, because, you know, I always say, you know, and particularly when I think about my mother, but when you go into a nursing home, not so much now maybe, but you'll have some fella singing Danny Boy or Frank Sinatra for an hour to 30 people, and there's going to be somebody in there who wants to hear AC/DC,
yeah,
and they never get a chance. And that's where I'm going. I think it's, we need to spread the word to be more person-centric. And
this is for everybody with the Alzheimer's there. Hell's Bells.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And give it a rattle.
Or would you like Highway to Hell?
It's amazing there are people there. My mother-in-law is in a care home, and she hates music. And she'd be in there and she'd listen to the music. I said, how is the music going? She'd say, oh, it's terrible, she'd say, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. So it's all about that. And I've developed a great interest in virtual reality. I went to Oxford last year and did some really great workshops on how virtual reality has been used in Medicare.
In the dementia.
Oh, yeah, in every, all sorts of healthcare. And they use virtual reality to teach nurses, put them into situations. Yeah. But I've seen people with dementia put them on, and they're on a boat, or they're in their old town, and they're just buzzed, and that's what you have to give these people, is not Frank Sinatra for an hour, but give them these meaningful moments that give them a buzz, you know.
Yeah, I have my own little story about that, but years ago I got involved with Our Lady's Hospice in Harold's Cross, and they asked me to come in and you know, do a couple of, like, they do the coffee mornings on different years. But I came in as well and did sort of going around to all the old people in the hospice. Anyway, long story short, I don't know, I was very close with my grandmother and my grandfather. Anyway, I kind of took the piss out of all of them.
Yeah.
And there was a few eyes from the carers going, what's going on here? And I could clearly see all the older people waking up.
Yeah,
they wanted to have the piss taken out of because they are sick of being patronised and plumb-ossed.
Isn't that interesting?
They want, and it's the same in every walk of life, to have the piss taken out of you is the ultimate equaliser.
Yeah.
It's a statement that says, you are one of us. That's why I'm taking the piss. When I don't take the piss out of you, you are othered.
Yeah,
it means that you are, I can't take the piss out of you.
It's so
you're
true.
Too weak.
What an amazing way to put it.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah.
And that's how we should be viewing all these things. And we're also afraid to be stepping in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And Jesus, give them AC/DC, you know.
That's right.
It's the same thing you're talking about, is giving people their own agency.
That's right.
You know, and
admit they're in the room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Don't be hinting that you think they're not in the room.
Yeah.
Admit they're in the room.
Yeah, people talk, oh God. Mm. I'm writing books, short stories on that whole area. Mm. And one of them is based on a consultation when the wife and the doctor are talking about this person who's in the room. But in my vision, it's two people, and then there's this snake. Like, do you remember that movie?
Yeah.
And he's gone round, and he suddenly says, "Hello, I'm here too."
Yes.
You know, and
that's what I meant.
Yeah, there's a lot about that.
That's what I meant. Brilliant. And it's clearly, Mike, I could see a mile off that all this Doolin and the late 60s and the 70s, Doolin and the 70s, and Stockton's Wing, and your interest in all these things, and how you've kept your. This is what's keeping you young, and it's going to keep you young.
I hope so, without a doubt. Yeah.
It's going to keep you young, because that's what youth is. Youth is constant re-examining.
It is, There should be no, such a thing as, and in fact, they should take the word retirement out of the dictionary.
Yeah, but also when you responded to the idea that you loved Lancome and you loved Amble and you loved all this, because you weren't making the mistake of your forefathers who go,
oh, yeah. You know, oh,
be young, embrace the new.
You have to, sure, but how else would you learn, you know?
Exactly. Well, congratulations, Mike. Lovely to talk to you. I had such a really loved listening to you there now, and thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And my thanks from Mike to Mike Hanrahan for calling in and having such an interesting chat with me. My thanks also to Hum, our partner. Hum is a finance company who provide flexible payment solutions for customers of some of Ireland's most popular retailers. They've been in Ireland for 30 years. They're a great partner for me, and they could be for you too. And my thanks, of course, to you, the listener, for listening to this podcast. It's free, not a premium, not a subscription. So tell one other person if you can about this podcast. See you same time, same place next week.
The Mario Rosenstock Podcast. Thanks to Hum. Finance made easy when you shop tech, electrical, appliances, kitchens, and much more. Flexify Europe Limited, trading as Hum, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.